Joining us right now at PMP Network is Jack Wagner. You might remember him from many things like General Hospital and, of course, Melrose Place. And one of my favorite songs, All I Need. We're going to talk to him about what he's been doing and some of the things he's interested in. Jack Wagner joins us right now. Hi, Jack.
Good morning. How are we doing?
We're doing okay. How are you?
All right.
You know, I was a huge Melrose Place fan. And it's interesting because, you know, many of us got together and would talk about the show. It was really a huge show, but it was an underground show. A lot of the guys didn't go around saying, hey, did you see the Melrose Place? But we all watched it.
It was on at a funny hour right against Monday Night Football. And I think the more popularity that show gained, the more, you know, the women probably around the country would be watching Melrose. And by halftime, all the men would be watching Melrose also. So it's kind of a funny phenom how that show is against a sporting event, yet it was really kind of a cult success.
I'm having a hard time getting levels from you, Jack. You're coming in so weak.
Okay.
So talk right into the phone.
Okay, I'm real close now. Is that better?
Yeah, it's still not good.
Huh.
You must not have an AT&T phone. It must be one of those hybrids.
Let me, is this, are we recording this?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Oh, we are. Okay, let me try another, hang on.
Talking with Jack Wagner.
Hello.
Hi, Jack.
Is that better?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay, let's do this.
Jack is, of course, well known from television and music. Tell us a little bit about your background. You're from Missouri originally.
I'm originally from Washington, Missouri, and I was I left Missouri when I was 19 years old, and then kind of shut down to University of Arizona. Made the golf team. Was on a taxi squad, you know, and I've been doing theater in Missouri from high school on. So I didn't get a scholarship in golf and auditioned for the drama department down there with a song, dance, and a monologue, and got a full-ride scholarship and wound up finishing out at University of Arizona with my BFA in drama, and then wound up going to Los Angeles the day after that and started as a tour guide at Universal Studios. So that's kind of how I worked my way to L.A.
So how do you go from tour guide to getting a gig there?
You know, I was pretty aggressive. I scrambled around with anyone I knew, anyone who knew anyone, and met with agents and eventually got an agent to send me out on an audition, and I got the part.
Hmm.
And from that, I got a different agent, and, you know, that's how I wound up getting General Hospital.
Now, they tell me that you actually were on the nighttime soap Knots Landing before you were on General Hospital. Is that true?
I just did a one-day. I wasn't a regular on it, but it was just a one-day stint. But at least it was, you know, wasn't a regular character.
Yeah, you got a little bit of exposure.
A little bit, yeah.
I mean,
I don't think the character had a name. I think he was third guy to the left.
Yeah, that way they talked about him the next day. Did you see that guy there?
Did you see the third guy from the left?
He was amazing, wasn't he?
Cool.
Yeah, so in 83, though, is when you Gloria Monty picked you to play Frisco Jones, and your life changed at that point.
Exactly. Long audition process, five different auditions, two different screen tests, and by the last one, I was asked to bring my guitar and sing a song, and I wound up going in and doing a Kenny Loggins song and then going into the audition. And she then brought me down to a dressing room and did about 15 minutes of improvisation, and I had been trained in improvisation and voices and accents and classic theater, so I was up for the test, and I wound up getting the part.
And not long thereafter, you actually got a record deal as well. Okay, your character was a singer and musician, right?
Right. He came out as a singer, and I went in and recorded a couple songs. And the woman in charge of music for ABC at the time had just come from the music business, and her best friend was Quincy Jones. And so she kind of turned Quincy on to the project, and I met with him, signed, and our first single was All I Need, which was a number one record on the AC chart, and it was number two on the pop chart behind Like a Virgin. Madonna, Like a Virgin. So it was all happened pretty fast.
Yeah, I would think that it actually did. And how did you handle it? Because sometimes it's difficult to handle all that stardom at one point, people telling you how wonderful you are.
I don't know how I handled it. I'm sure I handled it like most young people did. I went to my head pretty quick. And, you know, one thing is for sure is that I was really aggressive. You know, I put a band together. I started touring. I toured throughout the country on weekends and was back to work on General Hospital. And after 3 years on the show, I left and, you know, then pursued theater again, which was really my true love. So I did a national tour of West Side Story in 87 and 88, did a national tour of Grease, and then went back to the soap in 88 and 89, and then kind of chopped around for a while until I hit Melrose in 93.
Hmm. Actually, didn't you do Santa Barbara for a little while, too?
I did.
Yeah.
Went over there for about a year and a half.
Yeah. Now, when you did Melrose Place, Dr. Peter Burns, great character. And, of course, the big difference for myself and many of the folks who watched Melrose Place was really when Heather Locklear joined the cast, because it changed the dynamics of everything.
Absolutely. I wasn't on the show then. I came on after Heather started, but it was, that took the show to a whole new level. That brought the popularity initially, and it became, you know, that's when the magazine covers started, and it took off.
That, of course, enabled Dr. Peter Burns to have a romance with Amanda and Heather Locklear, and really the chemistry of that romance was pretty strong and carried the show quite a bit.
Absolutely, yeah. It was one of those where people wanted it to happen, but as writers, then they let it happen, then they tore it apart only to eventually put it back together again in the very final episode of the show itself. So it was Heather and I kind of walking off on an island that we had faked our deaths, and I bought this island, and, you know, one of those kind of romanticized endings, but, you know, that's how they ended it.
How close did you get to Heather, and are you still in touch with her at all?
I am. I talked to her quite a bit, yeah. So we've stayed in touch a lot over the years, and, you know, she's a special person. She really is, because she's one of the guys. She's interesting. She can certainly, you know, hang out and be one of the guys, and yet again, she's one of the prettiest women you've ever going to see. So, but, you know, she's got a beautiful daughter that she, you know, is a priority in her life, and we'll see what her next project is. It takes off. She's had a few that haven't worked out in the last two or three years, but she's always seems to be working, which is great.
I hope that that her personal life works out too. I hate when things like that happen. It's just she's a nice person, and she got wounded.
Yeah, she's doing just fine.
Yeah, that's good. Do you keep in touch with any of the other members of the cast?
No. Not really. You know, people go their own ways, but, you know, Heather and I stayed in touch.
Yeah, I'll never forget the character that Masha Krosh played. Oh, boy.
She was my favorite actress. She's actually one of my favorite actresses I've ever worked with. She's very theatrical and a complete thespian and very committed to her material. And, you know, now that she's kind of resurfaced here with Housewives, you know, I'm
right.
Really happy for her. I have not talked to her since probably Melrose, but... you know, we were really close because we really dug into the material, and we're both theatrically trained, and we're committed to as insane as the material got. Sometimes we really went to the limit with it.
It was a little wild, but the scene where she doffs her wig and shows her scars—it was one
right.
of the most terrifying scenes I've ever seen on a nighttime soap.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. Kind of whacked me.
It was a classic. It was a classic. And, you know. She did it well. Her character was able to have a dark side. You know, she's an interesting actor. I've always liked that about her. She can play sexy. She can do this. But the real key to those kind of characters, which was I was able to do on Melrose, is have a dark side. And, you know, that's what really creates, I think, interesting characters for long-running series, is someone that can be, you know, good and evil.
And talking about interesting characters that are good and evil, after Melrose Place, you went back to the stage, and one of the things you did was played Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, well, let's talk about good and evil, shall we?
Exactly.
The primary character in all theater. That project was, I will never have a acting challenge like that again. That was without a doubt, you know, the highlight of my career, to be able, one, to finally get to Broadway, and two, play the premier character I think any actor would ideally want to play live. You know, this wasn't on film or anything. This was actually live. So to make a transition as an actor in front of people is something that you dream about.
Now, everybody knows you from television and from the theater, but you've done quite a few movies, too. Which one was probably the most the best experience for you?
Well, all my movies were really movies of the week TV, probably 12 to 15 of those, through definitely the Melrose area, but because they just were so popular, movies of the week, you know, so I do one or two a year, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I enjoyed the most was when I played twins, called Echo. And again, that good and evil was looming there.
Mm-hmm.
But the most successful was a picture called Frequent Flyer, where it was a true story. I played a bigot, and I had three different wives, and it was this guy just juggling his schedule and his wives, and nobody finding out. And by the end of it all fell apart on him. He was an airline pilot, and... you know, that movie was the highest rated movie for ABC, I think, in 95 or 6, and it actually had a light side to it. The music was very light, and so, you know, it's always nice to be able to do different projects while you're on a television series. I mean, And those were the two I'd probably pick out as saying the most fun for me to do.
And you mentioned earlier about your love of golf and stuff, and I know that at one point you actually were working with ESPN doing some stuff there.
I did. I had some downtime between probably 01 and 02 to 03 there, and I created my own show called Off Course, and I pitched it to Mark Shapiro, who was the president of ESPN then when he was in L.A., and he liked it, so we did a season of that. They were, you know, experimenting with original programming over at ESPN, and what it was is basically not celebrities, athletes, actors, and what we would do is play around the golf to get to know them, and then we'd go what they would be doing in their real life. You know, John Elway was a guest of mine, and John Daly, and I had Marshall Faulk, and then I had Heather Locklear and Jimmy Woods on the acting end of it. And, you know, like James Woods and I went out and played golf, and then we went into a screening room, and he was showing a new picture. He had edited a short film. So we looked at the editing room, et cetera, and Heather Locklear and I, we went to a friend of hers house and had massages and margaritas and, you know, facials, and then played golf. So, you know what I'm saying? We mixed it up nicely. And John Daly, we went on the truck he lives on, the big motorhome kind of bus. We played some guitar and, you know, talked about, you know, his life and played golf.
I know that when you were doing that ESPN series around 2003, Brad Bell came over to you and talked to you about a show called Bold and Beautiful and a character named Dominic Payne, which you went to right away and actually got a nomination for an Emmy in 2005. What was it like going back to the soaps again?
It was different. It's a good question because I never dreamed I would be back in daytime television, but Brad Bell, I went to his house, and he really offered an opportunity for me that I said I would really have to be this way for me. And he said, oh, I'd like it to be that way too, which is collaboration. I mean, I used to battle tooth and nails on Melrose Place to adjust dialogue or have some input on the material. And, you know, he promised me that I would definitely have input on building this character and the material on the show. And he's held up to his end of the agreement, and so have I. So we've had a great run here so far on the show. And, you know, I'm all pumped up. It's a show about, I started watching it a bit, it's about a family and fashion design, and it's this one core family, and I'm thinking I'm going to come in as some flamboyant, you know, fashion designer. So I'm kind of preparing for that. And as the next time we met, he said, I'm thinking sea captain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, sea captain. That's what I was thinking, too, something like that. So, you know, off comes the nice coat, on grows the beard. On grows the hair, so I spent a nice month preparing for that, and my guy's a kind of a smoking, drinking, you know, black and white type of guy, and that's how that show came about.
And of course, the sea captain has plenty of time to fill up time with music and things, so they've incorporated that into the character.
They did. They asked me if I would consider, trying to put together the combination that was successful in the 80s in General Hospital. So I wrote a song with an old buddy of mine that used to work together. And from that came the CD, Dance in the Moonlight. And I've toured, you know, for the last year and a half, maybe about 10 weekends or so, different parts of the country. And the CD's released, limited release right now on the Bold and Beautiful website, boldandbeautiful.com. So it's nice to be, you know, have one foot back in the door in the music business again, not only for personal reasons, but professional reasons, too.
Yeah, we had actually requested a copy of that so we could actually play a little piece of it, but never got it. So.
Oh, it'll be there.
We'll unfortunately.
I'll have it shot out by next week. It can't happen this week. We're dark, but next week it does.
Yeah, but of course we did have the Melrose Place theme. We had that going.
Okay.
I looked through our archives to find All I Need, but I couldn't find it. But I was going to sing it, you know, All I Need.
That might work for you.
But I didn't think that would be.
It's just a little more time to be sure what I feel. Because you're all I need.
There you
go.
Better by you than me. Very good.
Got it live.
Always better live. Now, golf is still in your life. Tell us a little bit about some of the stuff you do. I know that you actually play golf in a lot of celebrity stuff, too.
Well, I used to play a lot more. I kind of went into a dark golf cave for the last few years here and kind of came out because of my son, Peter. He's about 15 now. He caddied for me in Lake Tahoe last year, which is the event that just happened a few weeks ago. And he was, not as serious. He wasn't quite focused. He was kind of, you know, a young 13, 14-year-old kid out there. And this year he's like, you know, Dad, I don't want to go up there and play bad anymore. You know, I want to go up there and play like you used to play. And so I made a real commitment of trying to hit balls again. You know, when I started on Bold and Beautiful, when you start a show, it's like a new kid at school. So I really made that the priority in my life, as well as my two sons, because mm-hmm. they're, you know, at that age now, 11 and 15, where, you know, we're on the last leg. We're on the back nine here. You know, they're going to be moving on in their own life here soon. So I'm very involved in their life. So, you know, I decided, you know, I'm going to really do this. I'm going to focus and hit golf balls and not go up there and play like shit anymore. I'm going to play the golf that I think I'm capable of playing, and we'll see if I am capable. So that's what I did, and we got up there this year and really focused it on one shot at a time and one hole at a time, and don't get wrapped up on where you are on the leaderboard, any of that. So, you know, he was great to have him up there, and it worked out.
Gives you some time together, which is a great thing to have, especially when your son's 15. Most of the time, they don't want anything to do with you. So,
yeah, golf is really one of those things that has given us something to do together, definitely.
Yeah, I have a son who's close to 15 myself, and he wants to stay as far away from dad as he can.
Yeah, funny when that turn happens, isn't it? They kind of turn around and...
Yep.
I don't know what happens.
Yeah, my daughter's 12. She still wants to hang, but she's getting to that age now where she wants to do other things, too.
Yeah. Dad, drop me off down the block, okay?
Yeah, don't let him see you.
Isn't the house up there? Drop me off down the block. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Do any of your son's friends kind of want to hang over your house because of you?
For probably 15 seconds, and then it all goes away.
Yeah.
Well, mainly because of the golf tournament, I think. Just a lot of his friends, both of them, you know, and they kind of look at you like you're not somebody's parent for about 10 seconds,
mm-hmm.
and then they're like, let's go play. So,
yeah,
not really, not that. I think it's kind of cool when you see, it's different to be on a television show and they see you on that is one thing,
right.
But when they see you in some kind of sporting event or something athletic on television, like a golf tournament, I'm not saying it's a football game by any means,
mm-hmm.
but it's certainly not an acting part. It just takes on a different meaning for kids, I think, so.
Now, what kind of things are you involved with in terms of charities? I know you do a lot of stuff for charities.
My number one charity is the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. My brother's has had leukemia CLL for the last 6 years and has survived, been a four-time survivor of actually going into the chemo and everything, which is amazing. So I got involved in that and actually was on Wheel of Fortune this past year and won about 140,000. And the charity I donated that to was the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. And I think we're developing a golf tournament out here in L.A. And so that's the charity of choice. I lost my father to multiple myeloma, which is blood disease, cancerous blood disease. And that's the one that I am going to be attaching my name to here. And now I'm going to actually take a bigger position in that charity.
My father-in-law has that right now.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're hard at work at finding ways to keep him happier, healthier, and alive longer.
It's so important to keep these things going, because the government alone certainly hasn't put enough money into any of these diseases, really, and they need to privately raise funds.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We can do that, though. We'll get that done.
It's a good thing. Good thing. Jack, if folks want to know what you're doing and keep up with you, do you have a website?
I don't. I never have gotten into that.
Really?
I never have developed my own website. No.
You need to. You need to get the jackwagner.com and have people know what's going on with your...
I know that there's a Wagner World someone developed, but it's not under my control. So I never really gotten into it. It felt a little too self-promotional to me when it all started happening. And we'll see what I might do something about it down the road.
And aside from Bold and Beautiful, anything else in the spectrum we can see you in?
As of right now, that is the only thing I'm focusing on. After the golf tournament, I've taken a couple weeks here to wind down and enjoy it, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm into my kid's football. He's just starting to play football. My 11-year-old's starting contact football.
Uh-huh. Like a Pop Warner type of thing, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's never played. It's pretty much flag football out here, but it's really been a good discipline sport for him so far. And the 15-year-old's got a few golf tournaments coming up, and that's the deal.
So that's the fun part. The fun part is going to all the games and watching and participating in that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And until they curse you as they get older.
Yeah.
Well, Jack, it's a pleasure to meet you. Jack Wagner, everybody. And thanks so much for coming on to PNPNetwork.com.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
All right.
Bye.